Welcome to Sex with Simmery. Frank, occasionally explicit edutainment on the most important topic of all. Sex with Simmery is not intended for children and is not safe for work unless your boss is particularly awesome. See more at sexwithsimmery.com.
There's a brand new way to get Sex with Simmery. In addition to this podcast and sexwithsimmery.com, you can check out some of our most fascinating conversations in our new column in SOT magazine. SOT is a very fun retro nudie magazine, and it's full of photos, art, culture, and sometimes pizza. You can read it for the articles, but you should also definitely read it for the nudity. The first issue is out now, available in print only, and it features three sexy pictorials along with art, writing, interviews, and not to mention that column from yours truly. SOT is ethically produced here in Philadelphia, and Sex with Simmery listeners can get 20% off by ordering their copy at SOTMAG, SOUGHTMAG.com, and entering the coupon code Timmery, TIMARREE, at checkout. That's SOTMAG.com and the coupon code Timmery. Hey, Sex with Timmery listeners. Have you ever wanted to be a part of the show? Or have you ever wanted to share a part of yourself with this audience? There is an opportunity for you to do so. And it is coming up on June 29th, 2018. We're going to be having a live Sex with Timmery episode as part of the Philly Podcast Festival. It's going to be the sixth year of the Philadelphia Podcast Festival. And we, of course, are going to participate. And we want you there. We are looking for folks who have stories to tell. We are looking for erotic, silly, embarrassing, fascinating, game-changing stories about sexuality. We are looking for your erotic stories. We are looking for your exploration of your own identity. It's a little bit The Moth. It's a little bit StoryCorps. It's a little bit Letters to Penthouse Forum. So if you have an idea for a story that you think that people would be interested in or would learn from, send me a message with a pitch. Tell me a little bit about what that story is. And you can send it to sexwithtimmery@gmail.com. That is sexwithtimmery@gmail.com. Send me your pitch. Let me know what your story is about. It needs to be about 5 minutes or less. And we would love to have you on. Even if you don't make it onto the stage, we'll also possibly have a little side booth situation where you can put it on there too, where you don't have to tell it in front of everybody. You can talk about it to a microphone in privacy, which might be more your speed. So we want to hear it. So again, email me, sexwithtimmery@gmail.com, and be part of the Philly Podcast Festival 2018. Welcome to Sex with Timmery. This is Dr. Timmery. I'm super excited for today's guest. Today's guest is someone we have talked about a lot of these subjects a little bit on the show. We have touched upon a lot of these issues, but today we're just going to dive all the way in. And today's guest is I consider a friend of mine.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah, well, we've gotten to collaborate on a few different things, and finally we're getting to just sit down and do this because we've had the opportunity to talk about a few of these issues before. So we talk on the show about sex work, we talk about porn ethics, and now it's become decidedly important that we fucking talk about FOST and SESTA. So to touch on some of those subjects, welcome to the show, Anna. How are you doing?
Hi. Good to have you. Yeah, I'm Anna Moon. I am a little bit more about myself. I'm a porn performer, cam girl, writer, activist, jacker, Jill of all trades. And this past month, since SESTA happened, I've been doing a lot of public writing about SESTA that's been going viral. I was interviewed in Rolling Stone the other week, and I'm just like, what is this life? Is this real?
Did you think that when you would get interviewed, like, of course you expected at some point in your life you'd get interviewed by Rolling Stone, because I think that everybody at some level thinks that they're going to, but did you think it would be for this?
I mean, when I was a little kid, I guess my thoughts weren't A, I was going to transition, B, I was going to be a porn performer, and C, the government was going to try to kill sex workers. So my answer would be no, that wasn't my assumption.
Fair enough. All right. So for folks who just need to get caught up on FOSTA, SESTA, this kind of stuff, what the fuck are we talking about?
Okay, so SESTA and FOSTA are used kind of interchangeably. One referred to the House bill, one referred to the Senate bill. I honestly can't remember which one's which. But it was basically an omnibus bill that was passed in Congress about a month ago, a little over than a month ago now, under the guise of combating sex trafficking, which obviously, you know, sounds like a noble thing. Like, sex trafficking is horrible. You know, no one is pro-sex trafficking. But the problem is that it was, I guess, twofold. First of all, our government does not see a distinction between consensual sex work and sex trafficking. Therefore, any form of sex work is caught up under the definition of sex trafficking under FOSTA. Second of all, this bill is a huge overreach into, that will have horrifying effects on the openness of the internet, and already having horrible effects with various websites shutting down and getting rid of all sorts of features in a way that isn't actually, you know, helping prevent sex trafficking. Is actually with the shutdown of Backpage, which is another thing that everyone's heard of but doesn't know much about, is another way that, like, actually strengthens sex traffickers while hurting consensual sex workers.
So I think the thing that I really want to make sure people understand about it is there's nothing in the language that actually makes it easier to locate victims of sex trafficking. Mm-hmm. In fact, the Department of Justice lobbied against this bill because they said it will make it harder to find victims of sex trafficking.
I didn't even know that.
The Department of Justice actually came out against it because they said this actually makes our jobs harder because it will just drive everything further underground. At this point, they use the internet to help locate people, and this will make it that much harder.
Well, so that's the thing.
They'll be wasting all their time on, you know, just like random sex workers and not actual rings of trafficked people.
Well, that's the thing with Backpage, right? And for those who don't know, Backpage was, I mean, I probably heard Backpage was an advertisement website that the government claimed was complicit in sex trafficking. And so these two issues, Backpage and SESTA, go hand in hand. Because, you know, on the floor of Congress, multiple congresspeople brought up Backpage and the supposed rampant sex trafficking going on in Backpage as one of the reasons we needed SESTA to be passed. So SESTA passed. Was it 97-2? John McCain wasn't there because he's sick and dying, I think. The only two who voted against it were Ron Wyden and Rand Paul. But other than that, 97 people, which, by the way, includes Bernie Sanders, includes Elizabeth Warren, all your progressive heroes, all voted for this bill that is killing sex workers. But anyway, so they said that this bill was necessary in order to shut down Backpage. And then in between the time that it passed and was signed into law by Trump, because a whole weird kind of thing happened there, it actually waited like 3 weeks, which is supposed to be more than the 10 days it's allowed to have, but they had some sort of procedural ground, so it wouldn't be a pocket veto. But in that period of time, Backpage was shut down by the feds.
So they could have done it without the law anyway.
Yeah, no, the law had absolutely zero impact on it. They'd been under investigation for years. And the way the Backpage raid was framed was carefully calculated to create an image of something that isn't actually there. So the raids happened on a Friday. And that was intentional because what you have then is you have these raids, the arrests, the seizure of the website, and all this news, right? And you put out the image that this is about sex trafficking and shutting down sex trafficking. And then courts don't work on the weekend. So the whole weekend, you know, everyone is running with the narrative of this hive of sex trafficking shut down. What a great victory this is. Like, Donald Trump is saving children, you know, that kind of stuff. And then Monday morning, after there's already been like 72 hours of this narrative, the indictment comes out. And the indictment it shows charges for money laundering, which is a catch-all term that's basically used for any kind of profit off of sex work, and facilitating prostitution. Nowhere anywhere is there any charge at all related to sex trafficking. And the reason for that is simple. Were people engaged in sex trafficking using Backpage? Sure, probably. the sad reality is that every site is and can be used for sex trafficking.
Facebook.
Right? Yeah, Facebook is used for sex trafficking, yeah. Right? Like, but
email.
Email. Right, yeah. Any of this stuff, right? Google. But what Backpage actually did was it, while providing free advertising for consensual sex workers, which that's important because a lot of the other ad sites, which have also since come down, and we can touch on that in a bit, but a lot of the other ad sites were paid advertisements, right? Backpage was a site where workers could post their ads for free, which meant that poorer workers could have a way to screen clients that even if they couldn't afford the fees for like more high-end escort sites. So while Backpage, you know, was providing that valuable safety-enhancing service, what they were also doing was functioning as a honeypot for sex traffickers. And they were actually working hand-in-hand with the federal government to arrest sex traffickers. In fact, when in 2011, when Robert Mueller, who's now the head of the Russia investigation, was the head of the FBI, he actually awarded the founders of Backpage an award for their valiant efforts in fighting sex trafficking. It's actually in the indictment, a photograph of the award that you can find online. The thing is, what changed between 2011 and 2017? And the answer isn't a change in 2018. The answer isn't a change in Backpage's mission or how it's functioning. The answer is that Jeff Sessions is now head of the Department of Justice. And he is very well known for not liking any sort of deviant sexuality whatsoever. And so
the dude is anti-weed even.
John Boehner is
something everybody can agree on.
Yeah.
Well, and I think one thing I want to just make sure that we point out is that we've been talking about how this affects consensual sex work and doesn't actually help anything in trafficking, which is obviously huge and important. We're going to be talking about more. But one of the things that I think people who don't necessarily engage in those industries need to know about is this affects everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, so the Craigslist personals are just gone now. If you have any nudity on Google Drive, they've been going around and just taking it and like just those are going down. There are like massive repercussions for use of a bunch of different sites, including Facebook's new community guidelines, are so much more strict about the way you even just discuss your own sex life.
Yeah, you gave a very good performance on that at Agitated the other week.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, this is everybody. This is a broad overreach for the entire internet.
So how I guess I should talk about how SESTA like actually functions at the legal level. So what SESTA does is it amends Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act. And what Section 230 is, which it sounds like, you know, technical jargon, it's actually the founding principle on which the internet functions, right? Section 230 is what says that websites, when third parties host content on there, aren't legally responsible for the content that's hosted there. So what that means in layman's terms is, take, for example, in 2012, 2013, I think it was, maybe it's 2014, when Elliot Rodger, the Isla Vista killer, the MRA who went on a killing spree in California because women wouldn't sleep with him. He's in the news again now because he inspired the Toronto van killer. But before he went on his killing spree, right, he uploaded a video to YouTube talking about the killing spree he was going to go on, why he was doing it. It's because, you know, women are, you know, bitches and wouldn't fuck him and whatever, you know, all his hideous ideology, right? Section 230 is the section that says that the founders of YouTube did not commit murder. Mm-hmm. Fairly straightforward, fairly logical, right? What SESTA does is it amends Section 230 to provide exemptions for sex trafficking, which, again, in the United States, sex trafficking is consensual sex work because we don't believe in consensual sex work in this country, which is its own conversation. So the result being, right, now corporations can be held civilly and criminally liable for any hosting related to prostitution, related to, you know, any sort of sex work that is illegal, which is the vast, vast majority of it, besides some kinds of stripping and porn, which is protected in California and New Hampshire and is like a legal gray area elsewhere. But so websites, right, are scared, right? And I would argue they should have been doing stuff to prevent this bill before it passed. So basically, you know, they're terrified because they can, you know, as individuals, not just be sued civilly, but they can, as individuals, go to jail. And I think, in a way, the government is treating Backpage as an example of what they will do to websites. So, right, so things that happened, which you briefly mentioned, right, Craigslist shut down all of their personal section, Reddit shut down a whole host of subreddits related not only to sex work, but all sorts of transaction things from, like, homebrewing to purchasing, like, airsoft guns. Microsoft updated their terms of service that they can, like, now view your...
Skype calls.
They can view your Skype calls, which means, like, they can watch the conversations you are having, and they can ban your accounts if they find inappropriate behavior, which they don't define what that is. So like, practicality, right? What this is a lot of porn performers or a lot of sex workers will sell private Skype calls, right? So it's clamping down on that. But what it's also doing is making it so, say you're in a long distance relationship mm-hmm. with your partner and you want to have Skype sex, you can get your account banned for that.
Yep.
And that also applies to other corporations Microsoft owns, such as the Xbox and Microsoft Word. And that's the interesting one because Microsoft Word, again, they don't say what constitutes inappropriate, right? So, you know, I also do writing. I've done freelance journalism. I've kept diaries, whatever. I've written and published articles about sex work. And so the question is, under these rules and under how broad they are, my Microsoft Office account, which is my family's Microsoft Office account, can get banned because I have written about pornography. Mm-hmm. That's how, like, broadly this is interpreted. And, you know, certain sites have shut down, sites that have nothing to do with sex work. Pounced, which was a... dating site for the furry community, was forced to shut down, and they made a big statement that, like, you know, we're a small independent volunteer run website. If we can't monitor every single post that gets put up, so if one person uses our site for prostitution, does that make us pimps? Can we go to jail for that? We can't risk that. And FetLife, you know, was worried for a bit that they were going to have to shut down, and what they ended up doing is banning sex workers from talking about sex work on the site, and which includes banning fetishes like financial domination and pro-doms. And I've seen this on sites that, you know, have nothing to do. Personally, this one hasn't been reported, but I've seen personally, for some reason, probably because I hate myself and I like seeing the awful things that men say because... I hate myself, have a grinder, and which is weird as a woman, but I discovered while trying to edit my profile to add something about, you know, fuck Sesta, that they have changed the rules, so you can no longer say the word porn in your bio. So I had in my bio that I'm a porn star, right? So under this new rule, which is likely, you know, it happened right after Sesta happened, so who knows for sure, but under this new rule, right, like, I can't say what my job is. And I think Grindr is an interesting example because other commentators have put out, and I tend to agree, that what Foster really is it's not going to, right, once this door is opened of this, like, destruction of Section 230, it's not going to stop at sex work, right? We have an administration that has very far-right views about everything in general, but particularly about sexuality. And
all of the information about lesbian and bisexual health has been removed from the Health and mm-hmm. Human Services yep. website. And they
and what was it?
And their reasoning.
CDC was banned from using the word transgender or something. One of those. Yeah. Department of Health, one of them. Yeah.
But like the Health and Human Services response was saying that, oh, no, we're just updating the website. And all the information that had been previously put on those specialized pages has been just integrated in other spaces. But a review of the website shows that nope, none of the other pages were updated. That information didn't go anywhere. It's just gone.
You mean the Trump administration is lying? No, never.
Yeah, but I mean, this has far-reaching implications for a lot. And I think the point that we need to drive home is that, like, this never was about ending sex trafficking. That's like, that is the mm-hmm. pretense through which we're going to just...
And everyone fell for it.
Yeah.
Right? Because...
Everybody.
I think it's carefully crafted, right? Like, if you make a bill and you say it's about ending sex trafficking and someone comes out about, against it, then there's campaign ads that get run that, you know, Bernie Sanders is pro-sex trafficking or whatever, right? And so it makes it so that people just vote for it because they don't bother to look at it.
But even aside from that, like, I have personally been on panels with people whose work is related to this. Like, there was a panel I was on a few months ago that was about addressing sex trafficking, and there were folks from law enforcement, there were folks from, like, rescue agencies, there was a person who was a trauma counselor who you go to after you end up in the legal system, and there was a guy who worked with Johns specifically, that who were court mandated to go to Johns group therapy,
which is its whole own problem,
which was a fascinating thing. And we were on this panel, and I don't know how long he's been at this job, and I don't know anything else about, you know, the people on the panel necessarily, but when I brought up the basic idea that we need to legally separate, and, you know, for operational definitions, separate consensual sex work from trafficking, and he just went, "What?" And we had this whole, like, on the panel discussion where he was like, his job at working with Johns, clients of sex workers who have been busted, is to just, you know, sit around and talk about, this is exploitation of women, you're adding to the abuse of them, and
which, like, doesn't that sound so, like, misogynistic and patriarchal for a guy to sit down and tell other guys what women want?
Well, I mean, yeah, but I get from their angles, like, you're gonna have to listen to a dude to take this seriously because you're a bunch of sexist. But I get what he thinks that he's doing. And we're having this conversation. He's like, wait, you're telling me that somebody would want to do that job? And I'm like, yeah, just because you don't want to do that job doesn't mean that other people don't want to do the job. Because, like, a lot of people don't want to do their jobs also. Like, separate from whether or not you want to do sex work, a lot of people don't want to do their jobs. Like, that's a different question. We use our emotional labor, we use our physical bodies at most jobs. Why is this the one that people need to be protected from?
Because it allows mostly women to make money for themselves, and we take the ways in which we are sexualized and objectified under patriarchy and turn it back upon others.
Yeah, but, like, it blew his mind, and this is his day job, right? Yeah.
And that's the thing, right? So, I mean, I've had plenty of internet fights with these people over the issue of sex work. I fought with Julie Bindle, who is a interesting quote unquote feminist who hates trans women, and also
apparently
the swerfs
and turfs are coming out.
She wrote an op-ed for the Guardian the other day that was basically like, prostitution isn't a job because the inside of a woman's body isn't a workplace, and like that, and claimed that if sex work is work, then rape is only theft.
Well, that's interesting, because that was an argument that a Philly judge used. There was a sex worker who was game raped, and the charge was theft of services. And so every few years, this judge is up for re-election, and like the Project Safe will usually come out, and March Against Rape Culture will come out against her re-election. But I mean, that is an interesting idea, because it's like, you're buying their narrative versus like, okay, so what about the jobs where somebody's doing roofing all day?
Yeah, and so that's the thing,
where,
right?
Are you concerned,
like,
about their
humanity? These people claim to be about ending exploitation. But they don't, if you are saying we need to prevent consensual sex work because that's sexual exploitation, right? Like, a woman stripping and making, you know, hundreds of dollars in tips in a night, or an escort making, you know, $200 or $300 an hour. That's exploitation. But you're not talking about the fact that, right, Driscoll's and other like food companies steal the wages of their undocumented laborers who pick your berries, that, you know, people in coal mines are working in unsafe conditions because of corporate malfeasance, that adjuncts are living in their cars because they're not receiving living wages, that teachers have to be out on strike because, you know, they're impoverished, right? Then you then you don't actually care about exploitation, you just care about sexual puritanism. Mm-hmm. Right? And I think the problem is, right, like, sex work needs to be seen as a workers' rights issue. And the problem there is that we have a huge problem with how we view workers' rights and labor and unions. And, you know, I mean, yesterday was May Day, and as we're recording this, at least. Yesterday was May Day, which is, you know, all about, like, it's like an anti-capitalist holiday workers strike. And, here we erased May Day and proclaim May 1st Loyalty Day and instead have Labor Day to erase that radical history, right? And we need to understand sex work as a labor issue, not as an exploitation issue. And so, right, these companies claim that that's what they're for, right? That they're preventing exploitation, but that's not actually what they care about, right? I got in a fight with the National Center on Sexual Exploitation, the NCOSE, is one of the main lobbying groups that was behind SESTA. And after their success with SESTA, they came out on Twitter and tweeted that now Twitter should be banning porn because children can see it. And I'm just like, you just want to ban all sorts of sexuality. And they're like, no, we just want, like, there should just be a filter so that, you know, people don't have to see this. And I'm like, there already is a filter, right? Like, Twitter censors sex workers already. We get shadow banned. We don't come up in search results. You actually have to turn on a button to be able to see sensitive imagery, right? So
Tumblr, like, has a safer work toggle.
Right, yeah. And it's by default on, right? And so
Google
their notion, what they're claiming is so blatantly a lie and, like, so, like, patently a ruse for clamping down on displays of quote-unquote deviant sexuality, whether it be sex work, whether it be trans sex, whether it be kink, whether it be poly, any sort of queerness.
Well, I mean, the stuff that goes first tells you what's normalized. Like, one of the other things we were talking about, Facebook guidelines, menstruation is not something you can show, which is a very interesting thing because you can show, like, snot, you know, but menstruation is a specific, it's connected to our ideas of womanhood, right? And so it's inherently like, okay, but, like, we're... Okay, but we can show, you know, violence in other forms. We can't show, like, a naturally occurring thing that some people have. And there were a bunch of really specific examples like that. It reminds me of British and Australian porn laws, where they specifically ban things that are deemed, like, kinky or perverse. And it's like
the big one in the UK is spanking.
It's like all these very queer things, feminine things. Like, it's so telling that they're like, we like sex just fine as long as it's this very specific kind.
we first had this conversation. I was on a guest speaker on Agitated. I was supposed to be speaking about porn ethics, and I decided last minute that I was going to strip as I did it. It was a great time. I was just like, yeah, here's how we're all doomed. Anyway, I'm taking my pants off.
Yeah, pants off.
But this talk was right before SESTA passed. In fact, in the 3 days before I made the PowerPoint and gave the presentation is when SESTA first came up in the House. And so, you know, I was talking mostly about porn ethics and I was talking about the UK law. And as you're sitting here talking about, like, first of all, the UK law is horrible, right? It would create all sorts of, basically you'd have to, like, give proof of identification instead of just clicking the button to prove you're 18. And it would make it, like, unnaturally burdensome on independent producers to, like, produce verification forms. And I'm just, you know, it's a horrible, horrible bill, don't get me wrong. And now I'm just sitting here, you know, 2 months later, and I'm just like, oh, the good old days when that was the biggest thing we had to worry about.
Yeah. All right. So, okay. We've talked about why it's bad. I'm actually curious what to do at this point, because there are people who are still circulating these petitions, like, to repeal it. I'm like, you realize who the president is, right? Like,
SESTA's never going away.
Our best bet at this point is the Supreme Court with, you know, like, freedom of speech. But, like,
because if there's one person who loves sex work, it's Anthony Kennedy. Like, like, I mean, he's the swing vote. It's like, I see one. Again, I am not a lawyer, but there's one part of the law that is definitely going to get struck down. And that is, right, that this law, as it stands, applies retroactively. Right. So things that happened in the past, you can be held accountable for, which, you know, I don't know if anyone knows the basic 101 constitutional law, but, you know, it's not even one of the, you know, foundations of American legal practice is that ex post facto laws are illegal. That is specifically that you cannot have, if you do something while it is legal and then it becomes illegal, you cannot be thrown in jail for what you did. Mm-hmm. And this law is blatantly an ex post facto law. Mm-hmm. And so that part will definitely get struck down by the courts, but I don't really see how, I'm not hopeful. I wish I was, but I'm not hopeful that this law is going to get overturned. And like, you can sign all the petitions you want. It passed 97-2, right? Yeah. 97-2. Every single, you know, Democrat voted for it, and except for Ron Wyden in the Senate. And by the way, Ron Wyden and Rand Paul, the two who both voted against it, both voted against it on like free speech grounds, not anything to do with caring about sex workers. Yeah, you bring it up because, you know, the people who hate sex workers are emboldened by this victory. And so they're already putting out more bills. So, right. So the bill right now, there's a bill right now that just passed the House and is going to the Senate. And in the Senate, it's being brought up by, you know, the two people who you'd think most would work together on things, Marco Rubio and Elizabeth Warren. Yeah. So, you know, across the divide, they agree on this. And it's in the House, it's known as the End Banking for Human Traffickers Act, which, again, is designed to sound like, why would anyone disagree with this? Basically, what it would do, and I'm less familiar with this one, but basically what it would do is it would add a seat for like financial crimes to this like sex trafficking tax force that would basically make it so that you'd go off, be able to both internally country and externally internationally put pressure on other countries to prevent people associated or accused of sex trafficking from being able to bank. So what it will practically do is it'll make it so sex workers can't have banks. Which is already a serious issue, right? Like, particularly with PayPal, right? One of the first things I was told when I started doing porn was do not use PayPal even in your personal life, because PayPal is well known for freezing the accounts and stealing the monies of anyone who's accused of being a sex worker. I don't know a number of how much has been stolen, but it's probably tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars over the years. And, you know, PayPal owns Venmo, which until recently was not doing the same thing. But I've started hearing tales recently of Venmo banning sex workers, too, and a lot of, like, direct deposit processors that websites like Chatterbait, which are and MyFreeCams, the cam sites, and, like, ManyVids and the clip sales we're using also started, like, screwing over sex workers, right? So this is an issue that even without this law is hurting sex workers.
And also just banks in general that have been closing the accounts of people that they know are porn performers, but not necessarily folks who are producers.
Right. And so this law would strengthen that in the United States, and it also would put international pressure on other countries. And, right, that's the thing that I think is getting a bit ignored. Is that Backpage wasn't just used in the United States. It was used worldwide. And so sex workers in countries like Australia, where prostitution within limits is completely legal, or in Canada, where they have, like, it's legal for the worker but not for the John, which is a messed up model if we have time we can get to. But performers in those countries used Backpage. And so now, even though they're in countries where the work that they do is legal, they are now losing their income and being forced onto the streets and being forced, you know, directly into the hands of the pimps and the sex traffickers, who are strengthened by when workers are pushed onto the streets. But anyway, to get back to this End Banking and Human Trafficking Act, right, it would have horrifying consequences, and it hasn't passed yet in the Senate. In the House, it passed, want to guess a number? 408-2.
Woo!
And here's a fun guess. What party are the two people who voted against it?
Republican.
They're both Republicans.
Yeah.
The only two people who voted against it are Republicans. Thomas Massey of Kentucky and Justin Amash of Michigan voted against. They're both Tea Party libertarians. They're both members of the Liberty Caucus. So, I mean, I don't know for sure, but my guess is it probably had something to do with, like, not wanting federal regulations of banking. But every single Democrat voted for it. Yeah. So when you take these two bills together, right?
I mean, we look at, like, Kamala Harris being held up as, like, this paragon, and it's like, yo, do you even know what she did in California?
Yeah. So these notion, right, that, like, you know, oh, this is a problem with the Republicans, this is why we need to vote for the Democrats in 2018. So don't get me wrong, let's get rid of the Republicans, right? But when you combine FOSTA, and now the End Banking of the Human Trafficking Act, more Republicans have voted against it than Democrats. So, like, this is a problem that the Democrats are equally, if not more, culpable for.
Yeah. All right, so...
And so what you can do, I guess, right now is, like, that one's still not law. You can call your senators, get them against it. Maybe, I mean, who knows if they do anything, but write about it, educate, got it, right? Like, the problem with SESTA is that no one was talking about it. until after it was passed, except for sex workers. Sex workers, we were talking about it for months.
Yeah.
You know, I remember seeing things, you know, even before I was paying much attention, performers like Miss Lorelei Lee, amazing performer, was like doing activism about this for months and months and months. And Melissa Gira Grant, like great people, both of whom you should follow. But now, like, people are like, oh, what can we do? Well, we can stop this new bill from happening. We stopped a bill in California. There was a bill in California that would have made it a felony to, like, facilitate prostitution, which would have included things like handing out condoms and bad date sheets to prostitutes, would have been felony crimes. Thankfully, that bill, because it got a huge backlash, was defeated and is no longer going to become a law, at least that's what I heard. But and the other thing is... we need to, you know, support sex workers physically, emotionally, and financially. And that, I think, gets to what the original, my original talk was back in February, which is porn ethics.
So, yeah, porn consumption ethics. What? Who pays for porn?
Everyone should.
Yeah.
Right? And so, you know, everyone's like, Pornhub. You know, when I give the talk, I was like, who here watches Pornhub? And everyone was like, yeah, Pornhub. And I was like, you're going to hate that by the end of this talk. But so Pornhub is... I mean, I don't feel like I have to explain what Pornhub is, but Pornhub is owned by this corporation, MindGeek, which is, I think it's like in the top 50 of Alexa sites, like one of the most viewed corporations in the world. And it owns Pornhub and like eight out of the 10, top 10, tube sites, in the country, in the world. And it owns a bunch of the main production, companies. Odds are if you watching mainstream porn, you've watched things that MindGeek owns on probably sites that MindGeek runs. And the problem with Pornhub, right, is, well, first of all, it's created this notion that porn should be free, which, like, you know, this is work. This is our job, right? Like, when porn is free, we don't get paid. We don't eat. We don't survive, right? But also the model that Pornhub rests upon is user submitted content, kind of like YouTube. The thing is, what that means practically is that people steal content from performers and upload it there without their permission. And Pornhub, while they can claim that it's not their responsibility, ironically, I believe, under Section 230, they can claim that they're not liable. They are aware of it and they make a profit off of it through ad revenue, and they are not at all proactive about taking things down. And so a lot of what performers have to do is constantly file DMCA takedown notices with Pornhub in the hope that they'll listen. And so the whole thing has created this notion, right, that it's okay to steal porn and it's okay to view porn for free, which are kind of one and the same thing. Right, like, that a lot of work and labor goes into creating pornography, right? Like, you know, from like plane tickets out there to like costumes to lighting rigs. Like, this is labor, right? And not paying for porn is kind of like dining and dashing, right? or like having a, you know, a contractor or a plumber come out and fix your toilet and not, and then like being like, oh, I thought you should do that for free. I'm such a big fan of yours. Mm. Like, you know, that should be okay, right? I'll tell people about you.
Many people have died of exposure.
Yeah. Right, this is a serious problem that people have been facing for years, and as porn tube sites have been getting bigger, it's just things have just been getting worse and worse. But the cool thing is this rise away from like studio production, big studios, into like independent content creators, that's been helped by the rise of sites like ManyVids or I Want Clips or Amateur Porn, right, which are sites where people can make their own independent content and upload it. And it's kind of like a YouTube model where you can search for performer, you can search for like genre, you can search for like all sorts of things, but it's paywalled, right? So you see a preview of the clip, you see a description of the clip and who's in it, and then you buy it. And they take, you know, a cut for their site, and then we get the money directly. And I think that's like the model of the future, hopefully. Because, like, we need to make a living, right? I love making porn. I make far more money on cam than I do in porn. And it's because, I mean, there's a huge issue with people coming into cam chat rooms and thinking that, like, they don't have to pay anything too, which is its own issue. But it's much more prevalent that people think they can watch, like, pornography for free. Which, like, you know, I'm not absolving myself of culpability. I used to do it all the time. I used to be like, oh, you know, it's like pirating music. Who really cares? But, like, something I've, you know, learned as I've been getting into this work is just, is how much it isn't actually a victimless crime, especially when you're watching and stealing things from independent performers.
Because we're making it worse. So, like, it, to use a movie analogy, because what's wrong with pirating movies, people often are like, but they make millions of dollars. Well, okay, yeah, well, the Marvel movies do, right? So they'll make these huge action movies that are like, you know, like a reboot of a previous series or a sequel or, mm-hmm. you know, something that like is guaranteed to work, and they put all their money into that. What they don't do is put money into the interesting, innovative, edgy, anything that's boundary pushing, you know, like what we are doing by not paying for movies is the same thing we're doing with porn, which is just making it all of the things you don't like about it. Those will be the only things that succeed, and everybody mm-hmm. else will get driven out of it.
And so in the movie industry, and again, I'm not a movie expert, but how most films work is in the actor's contract, they get like a salary for making the film and then sometimes a percentage of proceeds. Right. And so that's where you're screwing over the independent producers. But a lot of independent porn, there's no upfront payment. The only thing you make is the proceeds that you make off of the film. And so you can take, with stolen porn, you can take losses. And, you know, there have been issues with people like abusing the heck out of that. There was just a couple weeks ago, there was some group of people who were like buying all of the trans porn, like single copies of all the trans porn on the website ManyVids. And then they created their own website and were uploading it to there, not just as a free site, but pretending to be a subscription site where the models ourselves uploaded them to.
Whoa.
And basically like making, not just putting it out there for free, but making profit off of our stolen content. And thankfully that one got shut down. That did not take long. ManyVids, I believe, was very proactive on that because it hurts their bottom line too. But right, like, you know, people listening to this are probably like, oh my God, that's bad, right? And obviously, yes, it's bad, but I'd ask you to interrogate why that is bad, but watching free porn on Pornhub isn't.
It's interesting because now, because Pornhub does put out also just like original content mm-hmm. that's free, like the Young Visionaries series. Like I checked out Young MA's porn recently, which is, I enjoyed it personally. Mm-hmm. But they, like Pornhub, the site, paid for the rapper Young MA to direct a film and then makes it free for like I think a month and then puts it on their premium content.
Yeah. So Pornhub does premium, right? And certain websites, one of the big ones is Kink, right? Well, what they do is they'll put truncated like 5 to 15 minute clips of their like hour plus long videos available on Pornhub with like watermark and like links and everything. And like, it's a complicated thing to get to the ethics of like, well, are you still supporting a company that does bad? But aside from that, like that isn't stolen porn, right? Mm-hmm. And you can usually see based off of who uploads it. If like the person who's in the film uploaded it, you know, it could be a company putting things out for free. It could be a performer who had something of theirs stolen who is like, well, if you're going to steal it, I might as well have control of the stolen content myself. Mm. It might be a performer who's uploading like a short vid to like as like a teaser vid to the site. It might be like non-performers, non-sex workers, like couples who like make amateur porn and upload it for kicks, right? And, you know, whether or not it's okay to use that is its own complicated issue. But that as a concept is separate from one of the main ways in which Pornhub makes money, which is taking not they don't themselves take, is that allowing other people to upload content that is stolen. And that is the problem with Pornhub and all of the I'm saying Pornhub because that's the biggest one, but all of the tube sites are the same.
So the solution would be to go directly to performers and get it independent from their websites.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, following performers on Twitter is honestly the easiest way to keep up with us. But then and like we're nothing if not promoters, right? Yeah. You'll know when our stuff comes out. But yeah, sites like Amateur Porn and ManyVids, which I'll promote. That's where most of my stuff is. And I Want Clips, right, allow you to find things from independent producers. And then there's like queer, like you can buy subscriptions to porn, whether mainstream or queer. But in the queer porn, there's like great sites like Queer Porn TV and Trouble Films. And Pink and White's Crash Pad series. And they also run Pink Label TV, I believe, is it? It's basically like a Netflix of porn. Like, you pay a subscription fee. And then you can search various different categories. And they'll pop up with things like nature-based, like, softcore porn. Stuff like that. I've been really meaning to get a subscription to that myself. Hey, Gisley, if you hear this and want to give me a free subscription for promoting you, please, you know how to email me.
They have, we met at the Feminist Porn Conference a few years ago. They are not big on interviews. So I don't
know. We met a few years ago.
Okay.
They're nice.
That was my big, like, oh, the main celebrities. all right, so let's talk about you specifically. Where can people find out more about you? Where can people support your work?
Okay, yeah. So as I said, my name is Anna Moon, M-O-O-N-E at the end. You can find me on Twitter at Anna Moons You, A-N-N-A-M-O-O-N-E-S-Y-O-U. Get it? It's a pun because I'm a porn performer, so I moon people.
Ha.
Yeah, just Anna Moon was taken, so I decided, why not puns? Yeah, and on there is my master post. You can find the links to all of my other sites, but I can, you know, I guess I can wrap them right now. You can find me on most of my clips are on ManyVids, and I'm also on I Want Clips. You can find my stuff there. Just search for Anna Moon. I'm on Chatterbait, which is the camming site. You can find Anna Moon there. I'm on Sex Panther, which is this cool app that allows you to like pay to text directly with performers. And so you can, you can text directly with me about anything. I've talked to like, people about good beers and like, prestige dramas. It's a great, great time. And that's, my name is there is also Anna Moon. Yeah, so that's me. And I also, if I can promote some like other great people who are doing great work, as I mentioned, Lorelai Lee does great stuff. Melissa Dira Grant does great stuff. Liara Rue is an amazing escort and porn performer in New York City who's been doing great educational work and collecting and like databasing lists of companies that are discriminating against sex workers. Switter is a new website that came out in assuming that Twitter is going to eventually clamp down on sex workers. A bunch of sex workers created an alternative that's based in Austria, where sex work is legal, where it's by sex workers and for sex workers and clients to be able to follow people on Twitter, so you can keep up with performers even if Twitter gets shut down. And also then it's a way that like they're not, you know, monetizing your data or whatnot. So that's a really important website. It's Twitter.at. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for finding time to come on and talk about this.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
This is great.
I could have talked for a whole nother hour.
we could go for a while on this stuff. And thank you, everyone, for listening. And have a great day. Hey, Sex with Summary listeners. Have you ever wanted to be a part of the show? Or have you ever wanted to share a part of yourself with this audience? There is an opportunity for you to do so. And it is coming up on June 29th, 2018. We're going to be having a live Sex with Timmering episode as part of the Philly Podcast Festival. It's going to be the sixth year of the Philadelphia Podcast Festival. And we, of course, are going to participate. And we want you there. We are looking for folks who have stories to tell. We are looking for erotic, silly, embarrassing, fascinating, game-changing stories about sexuality. We are looking for your erotic stories. We are looking for your exploration of your own identity. It's a little bit The Moth. It's a little bit StoryCorps. It's a little bit Letters to Penthouse Forum.
So if you have an idea for a story that you think that people would be interested in or would learn from, send me a message with a pitch. Tell me a little bit about what that story is. And you can send it to sexwithtimarie@gmail.com. That is sexwithtimarie@gmail.com. Send me your pitch. Let me know what your story is about. It needs to be about 5 minutes or less. And we would love to have you on. Even if you don't make it onto the stage, we'll also possibly have a little side booth situation where you can put it on there too, where you don't have to tell it in front of everybody. You can talk about it to a microphone in privacy, which might be more your speed. So we want to hear it. So again, email me, sexwithtimarie@gmail.com, and be part of the Philly Podcast Festival 2018. Hey, friends and family of Sex with Timarie. We are so grateful to have your listenership. We have the coolest fans in the world. It's pretty much the best. And we hope that the love is mutual. If you are interested in supporting the Sex with Timarie media, either the website, the podcast, head on over to patreon.com/sexwithtimarie and become a supporter. For as little as $1 a month, you can be a regular supporter and continue to bring independent media that provides the kind of information that you want to have out in the world. Over here at Sex with Timarie, we have been doing this stuff for years. As you've noticed, we've got over 200 episodes. The Sex with Timarie website has been up since 2008. We've been giving you the goods for absolutely no cost, and we will continue to do so as long as we can. So thank you so much for your listenership, and we do hope that you will check it out. Patreon.com/sexwithtimarie. Thank you for listening to Sex with Timarie. Sex with Timarie, the podcast, is produced by Nathan Karuna. Our opening music is by Charles Evans. Our closing music is by Hanya Lee. Be sure to check out sexwithtimarie.com, Sex with Timarie on Facebook, and tweet at me, Timarie_LEIGH. If you're a fan of the show, if you like it at all, a little bit maybe even, rate and review us on iTunes and tell your friends all about it. And thank you. There's a brand new way to get Sex with Timarie. In addition to this podcast and sexwithtimarie.com, you can check out some of our most fascinating conversations in our new column in SOT magazine. SOT is a very fun retro nudie magazine, and it's full of photos, art, culture, and sometimes pizza. You can read it for the articles, but you should also definitely read it for the nudity. The first issue is out now, available in print only, and it features 3 sexy pictorials along with art, writing, interviews, and not to mention that column from yours truly. SOT is ethically produced here in Philadelphia, and Sex with Timarie listeners can get 20% off by ordering their copy at SOTMAG, SOUGHTMAG.com, and entering the coupon code Timarie, TIMARIE, at checkout. That's SOTMAG.com. And the coupon code Timarie.